Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Committee member and Arkansas Republican Rick Crawford, who stops by for a chat on government funding and the upcoming Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Farm groups will split $203 million to strengthen agricultural exports. The funding comes through USDA's Foreign Market Development and Market Access programs. Just shy of 70 organizations will receive funding, which is in addition to the $1.2 billion Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. USDA is conducting a sign-up for that program through early February. Farmers and ranchers say the country is on the wrong track. A new AgriPulse poll of more than 600 producers showed farmers rated the current trajectory of the nation at a little over 2.5 out of a possible 10. The poll also showed former President Donald Trump holds strong support in farm country. 39% said they would likely vote for Trump, including 45% of the responding Republicans. And finally, lawmakers have about a week to avoid a partial government shutdown. Several agencies, including the Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration, will shut down at the end of next week, absent congressional action to restore funding. The rest of the government is funded through February 2nd. Congressional leaders and the Biden administration agreed on top-line spending figures and now must determine spending caps for each individual appropriations bill. Arkansas Republican Rick Crawford is watching the situation closely and says Capitol Hill needs to act on this and many other issues despite election year politics.
So I think we have the first quarter basically to legislate. Because it's an election year and because it's a presidential election year, I think people are going to be sort of mentally checked out after the first quarter because the reality sets in, and this is particularly difficult for freshman members. They've got to go out and work hard and get reelected. And so that limits how productive you can be to really about the first quarter and based on what the calendar is, what it looks like. And there's an awful lot to jam into the first quarter. I mean, we're really 2 days in here and, you know, not seeing any signs of a lot of productivity at this point.
Mm-hmm. So one of the first things on the agenda, obviously, is resolving the government funding situation. Next week is kind of your deadline for a number of departments, including USDA and the FDA. How worried are you about the prospect of a partial shutdown at this point?
Well, I think what's probably going to happen is, you know, that the 1.59 deal was agreed to. You know, the principals agreed to that. The negotiations took place, I guess, during the Christmas break or what have you, or immediately following. That was the number that was prescribed, I believe, in the previous debt deal. So there shouldn't be any heartburn there. The reality is, though, we're probably going to have to end up in another short-term CR scenario because trying to move this between now and the 19th, well, heck, that's next week. You know, so are we going to be able to do that? I don't know. So I almost certainly we're going to have to see a short-term CR.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about the Farm Bill, but before we do that, I do want to also just kind of borrow on your experience leading the House Ag Labor Working Group this last year. A lot of talk right now about border security and the immigration situation at the southern border, but what did that experience leading that working group tell you about the intersection of the two and achieving something legislatively to actually address the issue?
I think what we have to do is look at this, you know, with a very narrow focus. The migrant workforce that we rely on in rural America, and that's unfortunate, but that's just the reality that we have now basically outsourced our labor on the farm. But that shouldn't be conflated with illegal immigration, people coming across the border. In most cases, these H-2A workers are coming from, they're return workers. They're coming from countries. They've already been vetted. They've already been through the program in most cases. Even if they're new to the program, they still have come through the H-2A program. So that shouldn't be a concern from a security perspective. The problem we have is the optics of the border. It's not just the optics, it's real. I was just down there last week. I can tell you it is as bad as you think it is, and maybe worse. And so that does complicate the support for an H-2A program, because people are like, man, this migrant problem is just out of control. And they're right, it is. But let's not conflate the two here and then create more problems to rural America who rely on a workforce to get the job done.
We'll talk Farm Bill with Congressman Rick Crawford right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. House Ag Committee member Rick Crawford says there's a bit of a risk to moving a farm bill in an active political environment like this, but he still wants to see it happen.
Well, I tell you, the last thing is someone who represents a farm district and the political sensitivities of farm policy, the last thing I want a presidential candidate is talking about farm policy. But here we are. It's probably going to become a campaign issue. And so in rural states, as campaigns, you know, kick in, and we, particularly when we determine who the nominee is going to be, farm policy is going to become part of the presidential campaign. It almost has to. And I really don't want to see that, because farm policy is so difficult for people outside of rural America to get their arms around. In fact, even inside rural America, it's a difficult thing to understand. It can be very convoluted and complicated. And so you don't want to make that a presidential, election campaign issue. Unfortunately, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people on Capitol Hill very motivated to consider and move a farm bill right now.
But I'm one of them.
Is the risk worth it, given all of the factors you just discussed?
Well, so again, we go back to what I said earlier. We've got basically a quarter to be able to turn something out. And look, we have some willing partners on the Senate side. So I think the dynamics on the Hill, at least, are such that, yeah, we have an appetite to get this done. Is that broad enough? We're going to run into some problems in the House for sure. When we see portions of our conference that are willing to take down rules, what does that portend for the potential for a farm bill to move in this first quarter? That's probably not ideal conditions.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Thompson has said that he's looking to move something in March. That's kind of the timeline that he's viewing it right now. Can you win over the necessary amount of hearts and minds between now and then to move legislation?
I've been trying to win over hearts and minds for literally years, even in the previous farm bills that I've been a part of. And when you approach individuals, you can have these conversations and they can see, yeah, you make a pretty good point. I mean, we look at, you know, the national security issue, that food security is national security. It's important that we invest in the people that feed and clothe us. And they get it. And then they get into a group and they forget these conversations that we had one-to-one, and it becomes sort of a group dynamic, and that group is strong enough in numbers to prevent us from having some success. And I'm not predicting that we won't be successful. What I'm saying is we've got some obstacles in front of us.
Mm-hmm. We've seen a farm bill go down on the House floor a couple times. The last two times something was attempted to be moved. Should lawmakers, should ag groups be worried about that prospect again in the path to moving a final bill?
Well, I mean, it's in the back of everyone's minds, particularly those of us who serve on the Ag Committee and have been a part of it for a long time. I mean, I'm in my seventh term now, and I've been through some farm bills. The environment hasn't gotten any better over the years. It hasn't gotten any easier. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that members are not well-versed in what a farm bill is, what it does, the value proposition to rural America, and the value proposition to every American, because if you eat, you're involved in agriculture. And so you should be concerned about policy that affects where your food comes from. And COVID, I tell you right now, the best time for us to have moved to Farm Bill would have probably been in 2020, when Americans were going to the grocery store and seeing the back of the shelf or seeing the bottom of the meat case. That's not the way it works here in the land of plenty. And that scared some people, and it scared some members. That would have been the best time. We could have got plenty of buy-in, but it wasn't due for reauthorization. But, you know, if you had it to do over again, I would have said, let's move this farm bill in 2020. The problem was we didn't have the gavel, so we couldn't make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Can't let you go without asking about Cuba. That's been a long-running passion project of yours. I mean, do you sense any kind of appetite from any of your colleagues to maybe change the status quo approach that maybe gets you to a point where you can actually do something on that?
I don't, unfortunately, and I'll tell you why. Because I think what we've seen from the Cuban leadership, I thought when Miguel Diaz-Canel came to power that he might be a reform type individual. It turns out that he has sort of doubled down. He's made some mistakes that I think have led to the opposite taking place. There's no goodwill demonstrated. This can't be a one-way street. It can't be just the United States saying, yes, we're going to take the risk, when they haven't done a single thing to meet us halfway. I've worked hard on this issue, as you know. I've been to Cuba several times. I've taken farmers to Cuba. I've taken doctors to Cuba. And I know that it can do an awful lot to improve their economy and to improve our ag economy. But we can't do it unilaterally. And that they're going to have to show some good faith, and they haven't for years. And I'm disappointed that Diaz-Canel has not been the reform type individual that I had hoped for.
Congressman, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through some state-by-state nutrition program information in this week's Map It Out.
Millions of Americans are enrolled in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. This map shows the estimated percentage of people in each state who are in the program as of September 2023, which is the most recent data available. New Mexico leads the way with more than 22%. Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Oregon have more than 16%. In most states, somewhere between 8 to 15% of people are enrolled. USDA figures show the program served roughly 41 million people. Those numbers are down by about 1% from August 2023 and 0.5% from September 2022. Looking at total enrollment rather than percentage of population, California, Texas, New York, and Florida have the most people in the program. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
At our family farm, we grow rice, corn, and soybeans. And digital tools are as important to us as tractors and combines. In the 30 years I've been farming, technology has transformed agriculture. But some in Washington want to stifle these technologies and empower our foreign adversaries to leap ahead of us in the tech race. Protecting our competitive edge will strengthen our economic, national, and food security. Our leaders need to support American agriculture by strengthening our technology.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue discussing the Farm Bill and appropriations processes with a panel that will have a little bit more insight on the subject, joined by Roger Shemrai with OFW Law and Christy Boswell with Alston and Byrd. And Roger, I want to go to you first, because obviously we did see earlier this week some top line figures agreed upon by the leadership on Capitol Hill as well as the Biden administration. Those figures didn't really vary that far from what we observed in the debt ceiling deal. I wonder, do you think that expedites the process then of getting to individual spending caps for each of those bills, just given the fact that those figures were not a huge surprise?
Well, it should expedite getting there. You know, you are correct in that the numbers are not different. They are the numbers that were agreed to in the Fiscal Responsibility Act. There may have been some small tweaks made in it, but it still becomes a question of how do you allocate that money across all the individual appropriation bills. And, you know, particularly when we look at the agriculture FDA bill, We know that the Senate was higher than the House. They provided a bill that was up to the Fiscal Responsibility Act levels. And we will see how numbers move between the House and Senate in hopefully the week to come.
Well, and I know we're probably getting a little premature when we're still in the middle of the FY24 appropriations process to look ahead to FY25. But I mean, looking at the tea leaves, given the fact that we are in the middle of an election year, the narrow margins in the House and Senate, what do you think what we're seeing right now bodes for the FY25 process?
Well, let me go at this in a couple of different ways. You know, first, we are going to see the president submit his budget. I suspect, and I don't know this as a fact, but I suspect it's likely to be in early March. Given that we don't have the 24 bills done, and that the State of the Union is now scheduled for March 7th, you often have the State of the Union as the kickoff to what's going to be the policy promotions coming forward. So that will provide us with a little bit of a compression in the schedule for the consideration of the 25 bills. To the extent that the House wants to get to all bills individually, that means that the committees are going to have to move quickly, and that means that the floor time is going to have to be reserved for appropriation bills. We'll have to get to that. The key point is going to be whether or not the House leadership will go along with the fiscal 25 levels that were set in the Fiscal Responsibility Act, or if we go into another battle over spending reductions below what was agreed to in last year's agreement. The Senate's already indicating that they're going to follow the 25 budget, our Fiscal Responsibility Act numbers. So, you know, I hope we don't have a repeat of the battles that we had this year. If they want to get the process done, they've got to stick with those fiscal responsibility numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Christy, I want to bring you into the fold and chat about farm labor here in a bit. But before we do that, just kind of looking at the broad strokes of politics on Capitol Hill right now, a lot of hardline conservatives taking a bit of an all or nothing approach with how they're voting, as we saw with some ruled vote drama this week. I'm wondering, how do you expect leadership to go about approaching some of that all or nothing approach while still, you know, looking to avoid a repeat of the speaker drama that we saw last fall?
It is certainly a precarious situation. And I think we saw that this, you know, last week when with the announcement of the high level numbers and some of the reactions that conservatives have had about that, you know, with the margins as tight as they are, I think the speaker knows and leadership knows that, you know, the American public is looking to have some resolution here and are a little bit tired and weary of this kicking it down the road. Frankly, that you know, any type of broad shutdown is not going to be good politically, and maybe giving some leverage to the Biden administration in the presidential year. And so, you know, I know the leadership is working really hard to try to figure out how to craft these deals and to appease the concerns of conservatives while also trying to make sure that something has the votes to get across the finish line.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. There's plenty of attention right now on the immigration issue at the southern border. Christy Boswell with Alston and Byrd says what that means for agriculture is yet to be determined.
In some ways, I think it might add a little wind in the sails, and in some ways, I think it takes all the wind out. With ag groups and farmers and food industry, actually through the entire food supply, there's a shortage of workers, and any opportunity to have any type of tweaks or reforms, you know, we're going to be trying to take advantage of that. And whether that's, you know, different appropriations proposals we've seen with freezing the adverse effect wage rate or the year round needs, or whether, you know, is there an opportunity to use work authorization in the border discussions for asylum seekers? You know, is that a way that we can try to fill some of these jobs? I think the climate on the ground is such a desperate way needing workers. They're hoping that anything can kind of crack open the window and trying to push it open further to get true reforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really anytime, as you well know, anytime farm labor comes up, usually the counterpoint by many on Capitol Hill is, well, we've got to do broader immigration reform. We can't just do this one segment of it. And farm groups have been working on that issue for quite a while. Do you think they've made any kind of headwinds in getting folks to bifurcate the two, or are they still going to have to move in the same track on Capitol Hill?
I think that, you know, especially in the House, when you're talking about broader immigration reform, the number one conversation is the border. And in my opinion, if there can be some progression made on securing the border, you then it does open up the conversation to have about legal immigration reforms and addressing the current workforce needs with our experienced workforce in agriculture as well. So I'm looking at this kind of half glass full. If there is some deal that can be struck on the border in this context, is there now an opportunity to put that issue aside and now looking specifically at the agricultural labor force and food supply labor force, even broader than production ag, to the extent that there's any political interest in that?
Roger, I want to wrap up with you and just kind of look at the broader scope of politics on Capitol Hill right now. And, as we mentioned, election year politics, narrow margins in the House and Senate. Wondering, what do you think all of this means for consideration of an upcoming farm bill?
Well, you know, the key issue with the farm bill is still going to be how much money is available in order to do all the different things that need to be done. We often have a lot more ideas than we have resources available, and the challenge is going to be finding offsets or any additional resources to get it done. We will probably have the same battles in the House that we did the last time around with respect to, do we wind up seeing further efforts to limit the SNAP program? Do we find other efforts to limit the Secretary's authority to use a thrifty food plan? Do we see further efforts to limit the Secretary's authority to use commodity credit corporation resources? So those will all be significant battles that we will have to get to. And as we talked about with appropriations, we're going to have a compressed schedule. So floor time is going to be at a premium. So it's going to be a challenge to get the farm bill done, both in terms of available resources as well as time.
Very good. Well, a compressed schedule on the House and Senate floor, a compressed schedule on AgriPulse Newsmakers. That's all we have time for here today. Roger and Christy, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through a growing medical trend and its effect on the food industry in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Food industry leaders are keeping a close eye on how weight loss drugs could impact the American diet. New figures from Morgan Stanley show 24 million people, or roughly 7% of Americans, will be taking drugs like Ozempic or Wegovy by 2035. Patients using the drugs have a reduced appetite, which reduces their overall food consumption. Morgan Stanley also anticipates they will turn to more healthy foods like fruits and vegetables, dairy products, and red meat. On the other hand, people could start staying away from higher calorie options like alcohol, sugary drinks, and confections. The report also shows overall consumption of baked goods, carbonated soft drinks, and salty snacks could drop as much as 3% by 2035. If you're interested in reading more, check out Jackie Fadka's article on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Congress has until Friday to avoid a partial government shutdown. That's also the day USDA's monthly Cattle on Feed report is scheduled for publication. And I'm headed to the Dairy Strong Conference in Green Bay. Hope to see many of you there. We'll continue to follow the latest in farm policy news at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.